allegation was in there. It was not noticed until the matter was on appeal, was not raised below, was not dealt with by anybody. The fact of the matter was this was never an investment decision case.
Well, what did you mean by that allegation, Ms. Kristoff, about review that was read to us?
You know, I think that that dealt with the fiduciary duty of somebody of AT&T. At best, it would refer to AT&T's fiduciary duty to its own shareholders. But there really was no...
That sounds in SELUSA language, doesn't it?
I know. And I guess you could say if it turns on that, it would turn on an unfortunate clause that wound up in the complaint for no other reason, for no reason that I can... No one noticed this until it was on appeal, and it certainly didn't turn on it below. The option to sell their shares in the open market, as... You, Judge Posner, pointed out, didn't affect whether or not they were going to incur this charge. And the fact that you offer a sale option doesn't make it a sale transaction overall. The arguments that were made to Judge Stanton, and it is true that I tried to intervene to apprise the Second Circuit that there was no jurisdiction, and obviously I do disagree with the people who filed the case as a 10b-5 case in New York. It just was not. This assertion by Mr. Mattioli, they had no obligation to tell of a competitive service. This was a letter from AT&T to its shareholders. And so AT&T, this was not a competitive service from AT&T's standpoint. This was a service that AT&T was providing its shareholders and being pushed under its letterhead. And the question of what happened when they called. When people called, there were some who had very few shares who were told you could just send it in through Equiserve. But virtually everybody else either got, and we found among these, there were notices where they would call them back. They'd say, we'll call you back. Some were never called back. Others, nonetheless, paid a sometimes huge fee amounting to thousands of dollars. And those people, even under Judge Grady's standard, were defrauded because, as his standard was, for somebody to pay a substantial charge for something that they could have gotten for free is deceptive on its face.
Do you have any comment on the Stark case, the Court of Appeals case? You didn't cite it in your brief. Maybe it hadn't been decided.
Star never dealt with the jurisdiction question. Star dealt with the whole thing on a...
Did it assume jurisdiction?
Yes, yes.
But it didn't discuss it.
It didn't discuss it. That was never raised. They dealt with it solely on the 10b-5 basis.
Right.
And as to the 16... May I finish for
you? Sure. Sure.
As to that there are only 16, these were the 16 that we found among those. These were just people who called and who they identified as living in New York and New Jersey. From the start, we asserted that this was the world class of people who, not just in this transaction, but in all transactions in like this, where Georgeson had sent out a letter like this, which would involve other Baby Bell transactions, those people were deceived and defrauded no less than Ms. Gavin. There was no jurisdiction. It should be remanded to state court. If you believe that it was covered by SLUSA, it was still a fraud sufficient to satisfy 10b-5. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kristoff. Our thanks to all counsel. I should want to advise the colleagues from the Second and Third Circuits that we're not always this generous in with the red light, so I don't spread the word in other circuits that we never honor it. Have a safe trip home. Case is taken under advisement.